I'm Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt.
Hi, welcome back to Willing to Adapt. I am Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes. Well, welcome everyone to another episode.
Would you, because I can edit this out later, would you care to explain to the listeners some brand new information about you that you have not explained to us yet? Because the last thing our listeners know is that you were engaged.
Oh, yes, that's true.
It is true.
So I'm no longer engaged.
Yeah, he broke it off.
She is no longer my fiance, unfortunately. No, just kidding.
No, it's true. She's no longer your fiance.
That is true. And she's probably listening to this too. No, I'm just kidding. No, we got married in December. So
congratulations.
Thank you. Not too long ago. Eric was there. Got to enjoy and hopefully enjoy the wedding. And
I got to meet people I've only ever heard about. Well, yes. So congratulations again. I just wanted to let all the listeners in on that one.
Thank you. Yes. And so, sorry, I'm off the market. I'm not single anymore.
I'm still single.
I'll give you his number at the end. No, just kidding.
That would be so scary.
It was.
I don't want people just randomly sending me their... Nope. All right. So, would you like to tell our listeners what we are talking about today?
Well, today we are talking about the classic fairy tale, The Sleeping Beauty.
You always pause right before you say the titles, and I'm always a little nervous about what's going to come out of that mouth.
No, it's for dramatic effect. Because
Do you want me to include like a sting next time, where it's like a really like bum, 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 or something?
You can choose background music.
Got it. I already do. This is one of my favorites. Today we are talking about the original fairy tale version of The Sleeping Beauty. Which most people may not know, the very original version had a very different title. Mm-hmm. And I can see why it didn't last. And then we're talking about the Sleeping Beauty ballet. And then finally we're talking about Disney's Sleeping Beauty, the animated film from 1959.
Correct.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, Romy, when was the first time you were ever introduced to a fairy tale version of Sleeping Beauty? Not any of the adaptations, just one of the fairy tales.
So growing up, remember, I lived in the ghetto,
ghetto
adjacent, and...
I'm not even going to fight you on that anymore.
And so fairy tales were not something that we grew up with. I think the first thing I grew up with more was nursery rhymes. I remember my mom...
Mother Goose?
Yeah, I remember she bought us a book, and I remember reading it, and she would buy us stuff like that, so... If anything, if I did come across Sleeping Beauty before I saw an adaptation, it was probably a children's version of the adaptation, most likely. I know it was.
Well, you went to the library growing up. You didn't come across it in the library?
Well, when I went to the library, I got books on dinosaurs and...
Oh, that's right.
Stuff like that. And so,
you were basically just Ross from Friends.
I've never seen the show.
See, the problem is my size don't come across on the podcast very well. So.
Yeah, no, I don't know what that means, but if I'm guessing correctly, probably. I was the type of kid who...
You're a much better person than Ross, I have to say that.
Oh, thank you. I'm hoping that's a good thing.
Everybody on that show is terrible.
Oh, okay.
Once somebody ruined that show for me once, because I loved that show, I grew up with that show, but I also got tired of that show because I watched it too much.
Oh, okay.
Somebody ruined it for me one time, they said, that show is terrible because it's called Friends, but none of them are. And I was like, you're right. They're all terrible to each other.
Oh, wow. Well, I never really planned to watch it anyway, so I guess I'm not missing much.
I feel like your wife would want to watch it at some point. Anyway, so I think one thing that people don't quite realize is that traditional fairy tales were not actually meant for children very much. And if they were, I'm kind of scared. But I think I'll just jump right into it. Do you want to talk briefly about fairy tales in general before I discuss the...
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
So, as most of us know, you know, when we think of favorite fairy tales, we think of all the classics. And oftentimes, I think most people automatically jump to Disney. But fairy tales have existed for quite some time.
Mm-hmm. There's a fallacy out there that Disney created these things.
Yes.
When they really did not, they just adapted them.
It's the same fallacy that people on TikTok, kids on TikTok, think the music that they're hearing now is brand new, and half the time it's from like the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Mm. It's if you're not exposed to it or haven't heard it before, you don't realize it existed. And it's kind of the same thing with a lot of stories and fairy tales and things like that. Interestingly enough, even the fairy tales, like trying to go back and find the original is a very difficult thing to do.
I've probably read maybe 5 different versions of The Sleeping Beauty for this podcast.
Well, and that's the thing, is I was reading an essay in the version I have, and the author of the essay was talking about how some of the early collectors of fairy tales back in the late 1800s, I believe, they basically would go to village and take down the stories. And most of the time, the stories were very different. Sometimes they were the same with a couple things different. And for the most part, I'm going to make an exaggeration, but I would say with Sleeping Beauty, there were 15 different versions they ended up with.
Yeah.
And then to top it off, there could be versions that were adapted in a different country to portray it a little bit differently. Because I think the version you're going to talk about, is it Italian?
It is.
It is Italian.
It's difficult because a lot of the stories originated by, you know, oral tradition.
Correct.
But, you know, the ones that survive are the ones that got written down,
mm-hmm.
which is normally the case because now it's evidence. But even still, even if it's written down, like, it's getting passed around by word of mouth, and it's like playing a game of telephone. It is subject to change, and sometimes accidentally, but even sometimes on purpose. It just depends. All the research I found about fairy tales, which I actually found very interesting, I was like, I think I missed my calling. I need to study fairy tale. But basically, all the information I kept finding from researchers and collectors of fairy tales and so on were saying it was very common and it was not frowned upon for people to just change these tales. Like, if you were taking it to a different country, you would adapt it to that country's, like, customs and traditions and morals. And that was just the thing. Like, it wasn't a negative thing. You did it.
And often the authors who wrote them down would also edit them for popular consumption, if you will. It's like...
Right. Well, you want to appeal to the audience.
Yes. And so...
Like, you don't want to hear a boring story.
True. But in the case of Sleeping Beauty, there was one case of how they took out one aspect of it.
Big aspect of it.
Yes, that would not have... That most people probably would have been uncomfortable with.
And I think that's the key. I think it has to do with who's your audience. Because there are definitely some people out there who would like specific subject matter that other people would be shocked at.
Yeah, and I think when you see the way the Brothers Grimm took their stuff and adapted it, often you see that because they adapted it to the German audience, who was a very different culture than the French.
Yeah, so I think I'll jump into it. So the very first version that we know of for The Sleeping Beauty is actually called Sun, Moon, and Talia.
Mm-hmm.
And I had heard of this version years ago, and I just kind of thought it was something the internet made up, because the internet likes to do that. And then I actually found versions of it in the proof that it existed. And so I was sadly surprised. But I think it also goes to tell you who was able to read during this time, right? Because Sun, Moon, and Talia, it's an Italian fairy tale written by, and again, I'm so sorry to my Italian listeners if you're out there, Giambattista Basile. Which sounds much more French the way I say it. I'm sure it's not how you pronounce it. And apparently it was published posthumously in the last volume of his 1634-36 work, The Panta Morone? Yes, sure. But I found some sources that said that it was even written down earlier than that. Do you want me to give a very brief synopsis?
Yes, because I actually did not read that one.
Oh, you're fine. You didn't miss... Well, you did miss a lot. I'll say you did miss a lot. I'm gonna just read the synopsis, okay?
Okay.
It's bear with me. I'm reading this from Wikipedia, but I have looked at other sources. After the birth of a great lord's daughter, Talia, wise men and astrologers cast the child's horoscope and predicted that Talia would be endangered by a splinter of flax. To protect his daughter, the father commands that no flax would ever be brought into his house. Years later, Talia sees an old woman spinning flax on a spindle. She asks the woman if she can stretch the flax herself, but as soon as she begins to spin, a splinter of flax gets stuck under her fingernail, and she collapses in sleep. Unable to stand the thought of burying his daughter, Talia's father puts his daughter in one of his country estates. And in one of the versions I read, it said he, like, promptly died from sorrow, which is sad.
Hmm.
Sometime later, a king who is out hunting in the nearby woodlands follows his falcon into the house. He finds Talia. Overcome by her beauty, he tries unsuccessfully to wake her. And then, overcome by his lust, he basically has his way with her. In some versions I came across, it said that fairies were watching over her and, like, cleaned her up, basically. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And, but, like, took care of her. But regardless, she becomes pregnant with twins.
Yeah.
And while she's still asleep, she gives birth to a boy and a girl. One day, the girl cannot find her mother's breast to feed, and instead she begins to suck her finger and draws the flax splinter out. And this is when we're going to lose half of our audience. Talia awakens immediately, and she names her beloved children Sun and Moon and lives with them in the house. The king returns to find Talia awake, revealing to her that he is the father of her twin children. The two eventually fall in love. However, the king is already married. And one night he calls out the names of Talia, Sun, and Moon in his sleep. His wife, the queen, hears him, and she forces the king's servant to tell her everything, and then, using a forged message, has Talia's children brought to court. She orders the cook to kill the children and serve them to the king. But the cook hides them and goes on to cook two lambs instead. The queen taunts the king while he eats the meal, unaware of the cook's exchange. Then, the queen brings Talia to court. She commands that a huge fire be lit in the courtyard and that Talia be thrown into the flames. Talia asks the queen to allow her to take off her fine garments first. The queen agrees. Talia undresses and utters screams of grief with each piece of clothing. The king hears Talia's screams and goes to her, where his wife tells him that Talia will be burned and that he has unknowingly eaten his own children. The king, realizing all the ruse, commands that his wife, the servant, and the cook be thrown into the fire instead. But the cook explains how he had saved Sun and Moon and fed the king two lambs instead. Talia and the king marry, and the cook is promoted to royal chamberlain. And this is the one part that is, I don't like. The last line of the fairy tale, its moral, says, "He who has luck may go to bed, and bliss will rain upon his head."
Huh.
Yeah. I came across one source that was saying, we may disagree with many things in this fairy tale, which I hope you do. The one thing they said is, if anything can be taken away from this, is that Talia does a great job of making the best of a bad situation. I can't even finish it. But there you go. That's the very strange origin of Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah. I mean, and then this does goes to show the difference in culture and morality and way of looking at things. But it also shows how we in our contemporary times can, like, I'll be honest, I'm not quite sure how they came to that moral. I don't I mean, as a human,
I mean, they had very different ideas of things. I'm not saying that they were better or worse than us, because I think human nature doesn't really change, just the way that we act and our philosophies and stuff can change. But yeah, I'm not here to pass judgment on that. Obviously, if something like that were to happen in real life, I would be shocked and horrified. But I think people forget that a lot of early fairy tales were very dark.
Yeah.
And you have to consider, this was a time when not a ton of people could read.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was just written down for posterity more than anything, because these were oral tales.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of them were cautionary, but I can't imagine what would be cautionary about that one.
Yeah, that one's kind of hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, but then too, we have to wonder, was maybe they were actually made just for entertainment?
I think a lot of them were.
Yeah.
Because there's one thing I've noticed about a lot of older fairy tales compared to, like, modern adaptations of them,
mm-hmm.
is a lot of the older fairy tales feel like they bounce around a lot.
Yes.
Things just happen.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no real connection to a lot of them sometimes.
And I kind of wonder, like, sometimes if it was also just a story that was passed around and it was
right,
parents could adjust it as necessary to teach their kids what they wanted to teach them. And you know, especially since it was an oral tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And there may not have been, I mean, outside of like, don't go into the woods or something, who knows, you know, something along that's blatantly
right.
obvious.
Right.
There may not have been an actual moral, or there may have, and it just got lost to time.
Right.
So.
So let's move on to the Charles, I think, Perrault? It's French.
Perrault is Agatha Christie.
That's Poirot.
Perrault? You sure?
Sure. Well, I the 2 years of French I took are meaningless now, apparently. Anyway, would you like to talk about it, or do you want me to talk about it?
I'll talk about this one.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you want me to very briefly explain who Charles Perrault was?
Yes, because I have no information on
Great.
That.
Charles Perrault. Yep. he was born in 1628, and he died in 1703, and he was a French author and member of the Académie Française, which in the end basically just had to do with understanding the French language and coming up with the dictionary and stuff. He laid the foundation for the new literary genre, the fairy tale, with his works derived from earlier folk tales. He published his works in 1697 book, Histoire au Conte d'un Passé. Oh, that's the best French I said. It means stories or tales from past times. And this is where we get a lot of what we recognize as our fairy tales. A lot of his versions, like Little Red Riding Hood and Cinderella, Puss in Boots, Sleeping Beauty, a lot of what we recognize are stemming from him and how he adapted them, essentially. I know that when he really started working on his fairy tales, it was after he had retired, and he was focusing on his family life and his literary ambitions. And so that's when he really got into fairy tales. All right, go ahead. You can talk about his version.
All right. So the version that Perrault wrote down, in many ways, it's going to be very familiar. There are some differences depending on what version you grew up on. So basically, there was this king and queen. They couldn't have children. The king and queen are never named in this story. They have a daughter. They end up getting pregnant. Have a daughter. They hold a party, and they invite the seven fairies that they know are still alive to come and basically give her a gift. I thought that was interesting because they basically did it on purpose because they wanted her to have the best, essentially. So they invited the seven fairies down. They come down, they have the banquet, and the first six fairies give her different gifts. And I think part one of it was like beauty, she'll be the most beautiful person in the world, disposition of an angel, her movements will be marked by grace, she'll dance beyond compare, she'll sing like a nightingale, and then the sixth one is she'll play instruments better than everyone else. Before the seventh fairy was about to come and give her gift, then an elderly fairy shows up, and the elderly fairy is angry because she wasn't invited. In this version, unlike many that I think we've heard, she's not evil. She's just an old grumpy fairy. And they don't invite her because they thought either she died or she was under some sort of enchantment. But either way, she's grumpy, she's angry, she takes it as offense, and she basically says the princess will die after she pierces her finger with a spindle. So everyone gets all freaked out about that, and what had happened in the meantime was the seventh fairy hid behind a curtain, I believe. And she pops back out and she says, wait, I can't undo this, but I will modify it, basically. And her pronouncement is that she will not die, but fall into a sleep that will last 100 years. And when the time is up, a king's son will appear to wake her up. So in this version, the father and mother, the father bans all the spindles and things like that. And 15 years, actually, it's interesting. The story does not clarify whether they say 15 or 16 years pass, and they go on summer break. Not really, but they go on their summer vacation to their summer home. They're in their summer home, and there's some elderly lady who did not know that spindles were banned, and she was upstairs in the tower by herself, where she'd probably been for all those years, spinning away. The princess shows up, says, "What is that? Let me touch it." And she touches it, and she faints, and then falls asleep. They try to wake her up, or the elderly lady calls for help. They try to wake her up, throw water in her face, They throw water from the Queen of Hungary, which was interesting, and I had to look that up, which basically is ancient perfume. Nothing basically could wake her up. And so the father takes her, they put her in a bed of silver and gold, and does the fairy come back? I can't remember. I don't think so.
The problem is, I think he has his version, but then there's a lot of different versions that are very similar to his that are slightly different. So it gets a little complicated because, like, sometimes their versions have names for the fairies and sometimes they don't. True. Sometimes the parents go hunting and sometimes they went to their summer home. Like, there's a lot of small differences based on which version you come across.
Yeah. So in this one, the good fairy shows up. I think they had to go find her. And she decrees that the girl... They don't name her in this, do they? Is she ever given a name, Sleeping Beauty?
Aurora.
Is she actually named in this
named
later on?
She's named after the Dawn.
Okay. I knew that happened somewhere, but I couldn't remember where. If it was this version.
His version is the one that actually gives her the name Aurora.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they basically... She goes to sleep, and the good fairy, the one who decreed that she would sleep for 100 years, puts a spell on the palace, and everyone except the parents fall asleep. And the idea is that this way, when she wakes up, she'll have people there to take care of her. Interestingly enough, one little tidbit, a dwarf who hears the story of the princess falling asleep is the one who tells the good fairy what happens back in her kingdom, and then she
does it say visits. Does it say how he got to her so fast?
Yeah, he owned a pair of 7-league boots.
Yes, and what does that mean?
That is a pair of boots that enabled anyone who put them on to cover 7 leagues with a single stride.
Yes. My version had illustrations, and they were, like, the funkiest looking boots, because they were super long, and they, like, curled up really, really tight in the front.
That's funny. I just picture something from, like, Dungeons & Dragons, where it helps you do stuff. But anyway, she ends up arriving on a chariot of fire drawn by dragons, another interesting thing. It talks about how everyone got put to sleep, even little Poof, the princess's tiny dog, lying on the bed beside her. You know, the sad part is the parents did not stay. The parents ended up leaving. And I guess the idea is that they left to go govern the kingdom. So they pass away. And then they say,
Persian talks about how everybody, like, was put to sleep until she woke up, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, it says that they would be ready to wait on her if she needed them. All of a sudden, thorny brambles pop up around the castle, and everyone assumes it's the fairy. 100 years pass, the king and queen die, a new family takes over, it's a new ruler. They have a son. He hears all the stories about the torrents that in the brambles, about whether it's witches or ghosts or an ogre who eats children, and in the end he decides he's gonna go check it out. He goes out there, and he's driven by love and glory, which I actually underlined. I thought that was interesting. He heads out, and as soon as he approaches the woods, the trees and brambles begin to separate, and they make a path for him to pass through. And so he's able to go through unharmed, but his party is stuck behind him. They're not, the attendants and others cannot follow. He continues on, because he's, as the story says, he's a young man in love, and how they're always courageous. He gets in, and I thought this was interesting, because all of a sudden it gets kind of fearful a little. The tone changes. They say his blood froze with terror when he sees everyone, and he's just, it looks like death is all around him. But as he continues on, he realizes they're asleep, and then he finally enters her room, and he finds her covered entirely with a gold leaf, and he beheld the loveliest sight he had ever looked upon. And this one, it's funny, because I think most of us are conditioned by the adaptations and that we've probably heard, where he kisses her and she wakes up. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen in this one. It's the presence of his love that basically causes her to wake up. And the spell comes to an end. He's just in her presence. He sees, he's full of admiration. He kneels next to her. She wakes up. The spell ends. And that's it. And
it's like the most wholesome way.
Yeah.
He just arrived and she woke up.
And I thought it was funny, because then it continues on to talk about how they like talk for so long, and the whole castle's waking up, and they're
like
all
hours,
hungry,
yeah.
And they finally come up and say, hey, you guys need to come down here and eat. And then so they go down and eat. He marries her.
Yeah, his version's actually kind of comical, because it talks about all the different ways that people like fell asleep.
It does, yeah. And it does talk about how they're waking up and stuff like that. And then he marries her, but he does not tell his father or his mother. And this is where I see it right here. And then it says, in fact, he had been living with the princess for over 2 years and had children. Oh, no. No, her name's not Aurora in this one.
No, I guess it's confusing because I was just looking at it. I guess I guess her child is named like
her Aurora, daughter is Aurora,
but she's not named. But then I guess like other adaptations like based off of his just call her Aurora if they don't include the second half.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, the son is called Day, which I now that you've read the other Italian story makes a version makes a little more sense. So the son, the night
instead
was,
of sun, it's just dawn, you know.
Yeah. So this is where the story gets, for me, it got really funky because it changed, like the tone changed. I almost felt like it was a completely different story. Let me see, I didn't underline as much on this one, but basically it starts becoming similar to the one you just, the Italian version. So it goes on with how he goes and he sees her and he lives with her, has kids with her, and he's visiting her for 2 years and he never tells his parents.
But in this version, they're married.
Yes,
secretly.
In this version, they were secretly married.
Because that's more moral.
Yes. Well, for French, it would make sense, too. Especially if this was pre-revolution?
Well, yeah, it's the late 1600s in this.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is funny because he was writing this around the time of King Louis XIV.
Oh.
Which is probably one of the most, like, immoral.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a stint where he was, like, super Catholic, but still.
Okay. This is where I read this one before I went to bed the other night. Let me see. This is where the king goes to war, so the son...
It's similar to the Italian version.
Oh,
it's
no.
Not as bad.
Yeah. So no, the king dies. His father dies, and then he becomes king, the prince.
Did your version that you found talk about how his mother was like part ogre or something?
Yes.
Yes.
That's the next part. And so where he always felt like uncomfortable around his mother, and that's why he never brought his wife and children over. And so the king dies, and then the prince becomes the king. He goes to war with Emperor Catalabut.
What was that?
Catalabut.
Got it.
Catalabut.
Got it. In one of the versions that I read, it actually named the good fairy Hippolyta.
Oh, really?
And I thought you might get a kick out of that because that's very Greek.
It is very Greek.
Yeah.
That would make sense on the kingdom she was from. So, yeah, he goes to war. He's gone. And his mother, who's part ogre, starts having urges. And so, similar to the Italian version, she orders a servant. It might have been the cook. I don't remember. But she orders one of the servants to go down and basically take the daughter, cook her up, and serve her for supper. So he takes the daughter and gives the daughter to the wife and ends up cooking a goat or a lamb. Gives it and he just sauces it up so she doesn't realize it's the taste of a lamb. The queen eats it, thinks it's the daughter, and calls it a day. A week later, she's hungry again, wants to have the little boy. Same thing happens, except this time I think he takes a goat, sauces it up, gives it to her, and then calls it a day. And then finally she wants the queen.
You're just like, yeah, whatever.
Well, you already shocked us with the Italian version, so this one's not as shocking anymore. So there's the queen mother who wants the food.
Right.
Yeah, she's the half-ogre. The queen is now Sleeping Beauty. So he goes to cut Sleeping Beauty's throat, can't do it. She says, kill me anyway because you've killed my kids. And he's like, no, queen, they're with my wife. He takes the queen to his wife, and they hide the three of them together. And he cooks something. I think it was like a hind or something. And sauces that up and sends it to the queen, to the queen mother. She eats it. She thinks all is good. Until one day she's walking in the courtyard and hears little Day crying because his mom was about to slap him for being naughty. Different morals for how you raise your children back then.
Mm. How dare you?
I know.
You can see it has like the semblance of the original story, but it's definitely less what they would say immoral.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, they just kind of cleaned it up, and they definitely took out the aspect of rape.
Yes, that definitely was gone.
Yeah, and they introduced like fairies into it. Like that was one of the bigger changes as well.
Oh, instead of the magi or wise men or what was it?
The wise men. They're like astrologers. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the end, the queen mother realizes they're alive.
I think that was their way of working around the magical aspect of it, because France was very Catholic.
Yeah.
So it makes sense why they would go for like a purely fictional realm.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
So the queen mother decides she's going to kill the queen. So she fills a vat up with toads, vipers, adders, and serpents. And she brings the children, the steward, his wife, and their maidservant. And just as she's about to kill them, her son comes back from war a little earlier than expected. He's astonished and angry
and confused.
Confused. And this was interesting to me was that the ogress, the queen mother, she was so angry that she threw herself into the vat and was devoured by the reptiles and everything else that she put in there. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
I'm so angry. I'm just going to throw myself into this.
Well, okay. So I just read Aeneid? Virgil's book?
I always pronounce it like Aeneid.
Aeneid. Yes. Something like that. I can't pronounce it. And it was interesting.
One of Virgil's books.
It's like the founder of Rome and
right, yeah.
stuff like that.
That's okay. Where he goes to Carthage. And,
yes. Yeah. So I read the last chapter last night, book 12.
Uh-huh.
And
you're talking about when Queen Dido throws herself on the funeral pyre?
Oh, there's that too. But I was actually thinking of the mother of the woman he was going to marry.
Oh.
How her too. She gets so angry, she kills herself.
You know, people were just very emotional.
I mean, it's interesting, though, that's kind of a running theme with people when they get so distraught and angry, that's where they go as women.
There's a lot of tropes
mm-hmm.
in these fairy tales that stem from, like, very ancient storytelling.
Mm, that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's a lot of things that modern readers don't quite understand.
Yeah, especially since our...
Yeah.
perspective on equality yeah. and other
when we move
on
to talk about the adaptations, we'll talk a bit more about that.
Okay.
But yeah, it's definitely, we read it very differently as a modern audience.
Yeah. Yeah, because like that was something that did catch me. Like, why would she throw herself?
Well, if you think about it, none of us really know exactly where fairy tales come from.
Mm-hmm.
You could make the argument that these were parents like telling their children stories. I don't really know if that's the case. I think it was just people just amusing themselves, to be fair. But,
probably.
But it was stories they were told to each other by word of mouth. And mm-hmm. you have to think, these are mostly illiterate people.
Yeah.
Unless they were like of the aristocracy or the clergy. And so these people would just kind of rely on tropes
mm-hmm.
and things they knew would be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why a lot of fairy tales have very similar aspects to them. They might be mm-hmm. outlandish and crazy and have like no context or anything, and like you'll come across a sentence where it says, "Yeah, and a fairy showed up and cursed her," and it's like, "Oh, okay." But then also like Shakespeare has a part where he says, "And then a bear chased him and killed him," you know?
Yeah.
Like sometimes it doesn't have to make sense.
Yeah, no.
It's just entertainment.
The last part is it basically ends with a moral. That's a poem. I had a hard time understanding it.
Is it the one that has like three versions?
It has two.
One of the versions I had three versions.
Okay, this one only has two. So I understood the first one, and it was the second one that threw me off a little.
Throw it at me.
So the first one, the moral, is waiting so long for a man refined and strong is not at all unusual, but it is rare to wait 100 years. Indeed, no woman today is that patient for a mate.
Why does that confuse you?
No, that one doesn't. Okay. I think that's still true of women today.
Sure.
That's a whole other conversation, different podcast, and I know maybe someone would argue with me, but I think the majority is the same. So the next one, our tale was meant to show that when marriage is deferred, it is no less happy than the ones you know. Nothing's lost after a century or so. And yet for lovers whose passion cannot be controlled and who run off, who has the heart to denounce them or to teach them a moral lesson? So... after thinking about it, my understanding is of that part is when it comes to young people who fall in love or lovers whose passion cannot be controlled and they run off, it's not so much who has it's basically, oh, look at them, they're so in love. I don't have the heart to denounce what they're doing or even to teach them that what they're doing may be wrong or not the best for them.
It sounds like something like that.
Okay. Yeah, because it took me a little while to kind of parse that one, especially after the first one.
It seems almost like, you know, almost like Romeo and Juliet, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there was a million reasons why they should not have gotten together.
Yeah.
But you get so caught up in their emotions and the love that they have mm-hmm. that you can't say don't do it.
Yeah, and I think many of us see that in life where you sure. see a couple who is, and I'm using air quotes right now, in love, and like half the people there know that they should not be getting married. I mean,
mm-hmm.
How often do we see that if not in real life and TV and other things?
Right. But you can see how, you know, this version was definitely written more for like the aristocracy in France. And so you can see how they made a lot of the changes that they did. But this version is actually one of the most prevalent versions that most adaptations are based off of.
Mm, okay.
So you can probably help me with the Brothers Grimm one. So the Brothers Grimm, they're interesting. They're from Germany, obviously. There's this misunderstanding that they kind of just traveled around and just talked to common people and collected oral traditions, like fairy tales.
Wait, I saw a movie. I thought they were like, they killed
Matt Damon and...
Yeah.
Yep.
Creatures and...
Nope.
Nope.
That movie didn't even do well, did it? That movie's so dark. That movie at least is accurate to the fairy tales in that it's so dark. Oh my gosh. No. There's this misunderstanding that they kind of just wandered around and just talked to just random common folk.
Did you actually read a biography on them? I've actually
never.
Okay, cool.
I did. It's over there.
Oh.
I have a collection of their fairy tales, and it's at the beginning in the introduction. So it was talking about the Brothers Grimm. It's funny because they have more than just the two. It's just the two that work together that we know of. Because like they had a family and other brothers and sisters.
But, okay.
But those, we know them as the Brothers Grimm because they actually like worked on the stories. And they actually got most of their stories from other aristocrats and like people of a higher class. But they heard the stories from their servants and like the nurses who were common.
So they were aristocrats.
So this, well, the Brothers Grimm were kind of like middle class.
Oh, okay.
And then after their father died, they kind of went low. Mm. And then they kind of worked their way up a bit.
Okay.
So they're interesting because the one thing I read about them is, although they did get a lot of their stories told from the aristocrats,
mm-hmm.
who were actually told the stories from the common folk who worked for them,
mm-hmm.
which does tell you the relationship that aristocrats had with the common people who worked for them.
Yeah.
They did have a relationship. But the source I was reading was saying that the Brothers Grimm, even though they weren't necessarily poor, they were one of the few people who were telling the fairy tales who were actually had a good connection with the common folk.
Oh, okay.
Even though they didn't get the stories from the common folk. So in the Brothers Grimm version, so originally, I guess they originally, like, they didn't set out to investigate fairy tales. They just kind of stumbled onto it. But when they were around, that was when the Romantic movement really started in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a push against the Enlightenment movement in Europe, which was very logical, very scientific, and so on. And so the Romantic movement was like the opposite swing of the pendulum in that it was very focused on like poetry and the arts and mythology and fairy tales and imagination and so on. Like you can see in society how there was that shift. And so it's interesting because that was part of the reason why their fairy tales became very popular.
Mm, okay.
And why they ended up developing an interest in it. But their version, from what I could find, is very similar to the previous one, the Perrault mm-hmm. version, whatever. But they have a few differences, and you can probably help me on this. They call it Little Briar Rose.
Correct, yeah.
That's one of the bigger differences. And they actually named the princess in this version. I think they call her Rosamund. It's interesting because they omit the second half of the story for their version. Like, they don't go into any of the aftermath after the kiss. They end with the kiss.
And they have a kiss.
They do have a kiss.
Yeah.
Their version actually is the only one that has a kiss. What I found interesting about them is part of the reason why they included a kiss, which was not in any of the other versions,
mm-hmm.
is it came from a tradition of German mythology. There were a lot of German myths where people were revived by a kiss,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was very interesting. And one thing I kept coming across for them is their versions were very focused on German morals and culture and that sort of thing. So they adapted for German audiences,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, makes sense. They did that with the French, but yeah. But I mean, you could probably, I can't think of any other major differences other than that.
Well, they had the wise women instead of the fairies.
Right, they didn't have the fairies, that's right.
And there was 13 instead of 7. Let me see, and I think this one too, they didn't go on vacation to their summer home here. It actually happened in the castle. That always struck me as weird. Like, both, you know, both stories have these random elderly women spinning away lonely in a turret.
Well, it's funny because in one of the versions, it hints that it's the evil fairy in one of the versions that I came across.
Okay, none of these do.
Yeah, but in most versions, it's just a woman who didn't get the memo, basically.
Yeah, this one, she was definitely 15. Let me see if there was anything else. I mean, this one was so quick. It was like, what, 1, 2, 3 pages long compared to the other one?
Oh, no, the Brothers Grimm version is very short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it pretty much happens where... Oh, and this one too, the king and queen fall asleep with her. So this is... Everyone falls asleep here, including the flies. The flies on the walls. I thought that was an interesting... And then the hedge of briars grew... Did it last 100 years in this version? Many, many years. That's
yeah,
all that happens.
Yeah, many years, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was some random prince who comes by.
Right. It's funny because... Like I said, there's so many small differences. In some versions, it's just, you know, the trees and the hedges grew around. Mm-hmm. And some versions, it's like thorns and briars that grew around. And I think, again, that just goes to show you that, you know, it changes based on who heard it and who told it and...
What little, yeah. What
it's funny because in a lot of them, when the prince arrives, it just opens up for him and encloses mm-hmm. behind him and just lets him through like magic. And I think in one version, he had to cut his way through, but in most versions, it just lets him through. But it was funny because in one of them, I think the version that said it was just all like thorns and briars,
mm-hmm.
it said that a bunch of other princes had tried to get through and they died on their way through.
Yeah, the Grimm version has that one.
Yes.
That says here that they were, the young men who tried got caught in them and couldn't pry themselves loose. They died an agonizing death.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have seen that in the Disney version.
Jeez.
Little pieces of human. No, I'm just kidding.
It's horrifying.
And I think that's about it. I mean, for this one,
it's similar, but it's, you know, it's got a little bit of both, but it definitely omits the second half of the story. And for, to be fair, I think the French version, it did say that I think it was told in two separate stories, but it was meant to be a continuation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they broke it up. So you could read the first half by itself.
So, on the Grimm version, I'm reading it right here, the briar hedge turned into big, beautiful flowers when he got close. And then they opened up a path for him. He passed unharmed, but then as he passed, it closed behind him to form a hedge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then he goes on, finds her in the tower. She's so beautiful, he cannot take his eyes off her. He bends down and kisses her.
Yeah, this was a fun one, but this was a tough one because this one had a lot. I had to do a lot of research for this. I think most versions, you know, like... For our episodes, there's just one source material, and that's it.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's one movie, or there's one book,
mm-hmm.
or, like, TV show or something. But, like, this one was tough because there's so many versions. And, like, technically, there is the very, very original version. But even then, because, like, fairy tales were so oral, tradition-minded, it was fun, but it was hard.
It is. And I think the other part, so, not for Sleeping Beauty per se, but they mention this, is how... Unfortunately, because of our desire to find meaning, there's been a lot of meaning attached to stuff that has nothing really to do with it. So, as a little aside, just to show this, now, because I didn't read a lot on Sleeping Beauty, but the author who was explaining it used Red Riding Hood, and how, I guess, there's a lot of...
Well, the original version for that one's different. The ending's different.
Yes, but what she basically, or what the author of the essay went through, is he basically said, there's a lot of understanding of fairy tales, and a lot of times they'll take psychoanalysis and they'll look for the psychosocial sexual meaning, and when you really look back at the original fairy tales, a lot of what they're adding and a lot of this deep dark meanings they're getting out of them are from details that were added in the last maybe 100 years, not even the original ones that we have written down. And that he did that with Riding Hood, and how he showed a lot of the things that I think it was Eric Fromm, which we see into the woods, a lot of that's been added in really has nothing to do with details from the original story. So it tells you more about contemporary times than it does about the original story. But yeah, no, it's.
I think analysis for anything is always a telltale sign of the time period that the analysis was made.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like, there's a lot of modern analysis that I would say almost nobody in the past has ever thought of. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's good analysis.
No, true. I feel like I had to weed through a lot of ridiculous, pretentious academic stuff.
When it goes
stuff.
Back to what you said, I think in some of what we've talked about in the past with some of our adaptations
mm-hmm.
is how much of this is true and how much of this is people just looking way too much into this.
They're bored.
Yeah.
They have a dissertation.
Because I think, to be fair, we don't know why
mm-hmm.
Sun, Moon, and Tali was written.
Yeah.
And as far as we know, that is the very earliest version.
Mm-hmm.
People were saying a lot of that story has tradition in, like, Greek myths and stuff, which I think, you know, there's some truth to that. Like, they were talking about...
Now that you mentioned it, I could see that.
Yeah. But we don't know exactly why that story was written. We don't know, like, who came up with it. We mm-hmm. just know that that was when it was written.
Someone with a dark...
Right. But, dark I mean, but I don't know. Like, you know, like, for some cultures, maybe that wasn't so shocking.
True.
Like, I think the idea of rape is horrible.
Do you remember what era? Like, 15th century?
The earliest 14th? Version I found was it was a part of a collection from the late 1500s.
Okay.
So definitely the ending of the medieval period.
Okay.
Yeah, and it makes sense, because if you look at old stories from the medieval period, yeah. there are stories like that.
Yeah,
in the medieval period, is not as black and white as people think it is. You just look at some of the stories; like, some of the stories are very sexual.
Mm.
Like, they have a lot of what we call nowadays would call, like, college humor
mm-hmm.
in their stories. It just goes to show that everybody has a sense of humor at some point. But if you look, have you ever read the Canterbury Tales?
In high school, but I don't remember them very well.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't remember all of them very well, but one I remember is one of the stories, there's a woman. In the story, basically, she's raped.
Mm.
And she, I think, ends up getting married, either to the person or someone else, but, like, she ends up having children and stuff. But I'm just thinking, like, this was a very popular story.
Yeah.
And just, like, the idea that this existed, like, stories like this existed for the time, like, it was not unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if you take the idea of, like, curse and fairies and stuff out, because the original version doesn't have any of that, technically. Mm-hmm. It's not even 100 years in the original version. It's just many years, it said.
Yeah.
Like, she just had a sleeping sickness, you know?
I mean, in some ways, we can see that in a contemporary society. It's kind of like the difference between watching Game of Thrones, which has some really dark and ugly stuff, but it's still entertaining for the majority, for a large population.
I don't like Game of Thrones, but I do agree with you.
Yeah. Versus those who prefer to watch Hallmark movies.
Right. I mean, it just goes to show you that there's many different types mm-hmm. of people, different values out there.
Yes.
And
so the Italian version was Game of Thrones, and Perrault's version was Hallmark. And actually, Brothers Grimm would be more so.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it does. I agree with you. I think that it's the morality of humanity has not changed. And you see that on the different versions and adaptations. And I think fairy tales...
It's the reading of it changes.
Yeah. And I think fairy tales are a great window into the differences in culture, societies, and populations.
Right.
Cool.
Great. Anything else? What was your favorite version?
My favorite version. Definitely. Well, I didn't read the other one, the Italian
but
one.
But I read it to you.
So... It definitely was not that one.
Okay.
Perrault's version.
Okay, that's the most popular version.
Yeah. I still was a little... The ogre part, yeah...
Well, I mean, if you end with her waking up, you know...
it's kind of like when I watch... there's a movie I watch, and I only watch it halfway, because then it gets all... I don't like the ending.
What movie?
La La Land.
Oh.
I watch only...
That's fine, I just don't watch it.
I like it. So
my favorite response I received from someone is, but you like jazz, why don't you like that movie? I was like, if I liked every movie with jazz in it, I would just like a lot of movies.
That's, yeah, I hate when people do that. So no, the Perrault one, the ending was interesting.
I think I agree with you. I think I like his version the most.
Yeah. Only because the Grimm brothers were a little too, like, they trimmed it a little too much.
Yeah, they trimmed it. It was very simplified.
It was very German.
It was very German. It was very... Theirs was definitely much more message-driven. Mm-hmm. Like, they wanted... Yeah, you have to consider... This was also when Germany was unifying.
Mm.
And some people have said you can see, like, the very, very beginnings of how we got to Hitler. Because they were... To be fair, the 1800s was a very nationalistic time for a lot of countries in Europe.
Oh, okay.
And it was this idea of we're superior, we're better
mm-hmm.
for a lot of countries, even America. And so, especially with, like, Italy and Germany, because they were both unifying countries at the time, like, Italy didn't even become a country until the 1870s.
Yeah.
Like, it was a bunch of different countries.
Mm-hmm.
And Germany was the same thing. Like, Germany became a country right around the same time. It was unified into one cohesive. Under the Kaiser, yeah. Okay. But They were a mix of mm-hmm. a bunch of different countries and different monarchs and whatever prior to that. And so, like, Germany as a country didn't even exist as we know it until, like, the late 1800s, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, but this was like the beginnings of that. Like, this was them consolidating and becoming that. And like, it was like the German people coming together and like trying to like collect their history and their folklore and their morals and stuff and take it to the world, essentially.
And I think I read somewhere too that the Brothers Grimm tried to I don't want to say they nationalized it, but they tried to Germanize it somewhat. And if they couldn't, they were very distinct about the French aspects of the fairy tales they brought on. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Cool.
So there you go.
That's the original, the original source.
That's all three of the most popular. But don't worry, there's a lot more fun in the adaptations. Right?
Yep.
Next time on Willing to Adapt.
The first major adaptation that Sleeping Beauty ever saw. And that is the ballet by Tchaikovsky.
What? Disney was not the first?
So, based on the timeless fairy tale, The Sleeping Beauty is one of the world's most beloved and captivating ballets. Featuring incredible music by Tchaikovsky, gorgeous costumes, lavish decor, and exquisite variations for nearly every character. Because the guys got to like lift all the girls and like throw them around and all these things. Like, I was like, this is fun, this is cool, but then it's also really tough. In the 19th century, the main point for classical ballet was not necessarily the plot of the story, but to showcase the technique of the dancers. You know, the storyteller in me does want more sometimes.
There's a similar debate in the video game industry.
Sure.
I mean, story versus gameplay.
I was watching somebody from the Royal Ballet who said, if you can dance Aurora, you can dance anything in ballet.
Wow.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please like and subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also love if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromi@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.